Who wants the intro? Don't all run at once. Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to Bad Voltage episode 33. Woo. We all hope you had a wonderful time over the break, however you celebrated it. So what have we got on this show, Mr. Langridge?
We are going to be speaking to Michael Hall, who is a community manager for Canonical, about the Ubuntu phone and how much Brian hates it.
And then we're going to go into me and Stuart's and mine, our predictions. Stuart and me will have predictions for 2015.
And then we'll continue the Wrong in 60 segment second with Stuart.
Wrong? Did you say Wrong in 60 segments? Which is actually true, by the way.
That's the whole loop.
Well, now we're going to have to do the Wrong in 60 seconds for 60 segments, aren't we?
That
can't be good.
All right. And then, we're going to have a review from Mr. Jeremy Garcia of Soylent, this magic eating dust. That probably doesn't best represent it.
That might be their new marketing slogan there. Soylent, magic eating
that's
dust.
That's going to be there on the website.
What is it time for, by the way?
And now, Bad Voltage.
You are a moron. Stop doing it. It's New Year, it's 2015, so clearly it's time, after the last show in which we reviewed last year's predictions and how wrong we were, to give our predictions for the new 2015. But before we start, I have to reiterate the rules again after the shambles that was last time.
I was
going to
say, clearly, we should do it. We should make the rules a little more clear this time because it's one of the rules,
by the way, that when you ask for community feedback, that you don't deliberately make somebody's name much bigger than somebody else's name for how wrong they were in the prediction. Is that going to be one of the rules?
Maybe? That happened in the forum, but I think that probably got you more votes because people took pity on you. And so I think you should be thanking Stuart Langridge right now.
Did that happen? I don't remember that happening.
Yeah, it's a bug in the forum, isn't it? Yeah,
I think that's anyway, a bug in discourse. However, right, so the rules are these. When you give your prediction, you have to give some kind of unambiguous win condition, right? It has to be something where a year from now, when we review them, we can say unambiguously that happened or it didn't happen. We don't have a half-hour argument about whether it happened or not. So you can't say things like, whatever will become more popular. Right? None of that.
By the way, I'm noting down in the show notes, so you guys know, unambiguous win condition has to be the name of this show.
Okay. Right, we're calling it all unambiguous win condition. There it is. Right. Okay, so...
Is it win or wing? Carry on, anyway.
So, as with last year, we're going to do two of us this week and two of us in the next show. So, this time, it's Brian and I believe, yes?
Fancy.
Yeah.
So, shall I go first?
I don't care.
My predictions. Right. The first one. I think we will see this year $1 billion in sales of things bought with NFC payments from phones. Right, whether that's Apple Pay or if Google come out with something or using something like Droplet Pay or whatever, we're going to see $1 billion worth of things bought with NFC payments from phones.
Now, is the spirit of this people waving their phone in front of a thing when they go and buy something, or is it specifically NFC?
Oh, well, okay, yeah, fine. The spirit is people waving their phone in front of something, but as far as I'm aware, that's going to be NFC. But
it's probably
fine.
If
Google come up with a thing and it works on ultrasound, like the new Chromecast stuff does and Boris Smith came up with, then yes, fine, that would count. But the point is that people are paying with their phone and nothing else and sort of waving their phone at a thing on the till.
And is that $1 billion this year from everybody combined using those
Everybody
payments?
Combined, yeah, $1 billion.
All right.
I have two things to say about this. The first is that is the most boring prediction I have ever heard.
That is a shit prediction.
That is a real crap prediction. The second is I think that really is almost certainly going to happen, but there's a slight chance it won't, so I'm going to let you keep it.
Well, that's very decent of you. Right. Well, in that case, I was going to do both mine first, but I think we should alternate, right?
Because I want to hear the rest of yours. I want to hear him. Let's finish. Let's get Stuart done.
Prediction one. Right. Prediction one was Bobbins. What's prediction two?
It's not Bobbins. It is Bobbins.
That's lame, dude.
It's all right.
Oh, billion. Oh, Apple have released this very, very popular payment thing that's based on NFC that all the banks are picking up. I think that maybe $1 billion will be done in business.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Do you not think it's an exciting change in the way that stuff works, though, right?
Why don't we make this interesting? How about $2 billion?
Okay.
10.
You want to do 2
billion? I'll go for 2 billion. I'm not sure I'll go
all
for
right,
10.
2 billion.
10 billion is an awful lot of money. Right, I'm not sure I'll go for
2 10. Billion. I like that we're peer pressuring each other into getting more daring predictions. That's a fantastic idea.
I was going to say, do I hear 20? Do I hear 20?
No, absolutely not.
By the way, if it's more than a billion and less than 2 billion, I'm going to be very happy at the end of this year.
Well, I hate all of you. Right.
Prediction number two.
Since I'm not allowed boring but important to the future of technology predictions, I shall leave out that I think they're going to release a Chrome OS tablet, but you can remember this next year when they do. So leave that aside for one moment. Steam machines are going to come out this year, I think. I think we're actually going to see proper Steam machines in shops on the market. And for the given period after they come out, after a given Steam machine comes out, they will outsell consoles for that same period. So if you look at, you know, the sales for the first month of the PS4, the first month of Steam machines will be more than that.
So hang on. Okay. So you're saying, if you look at the first month of the PS4 coming out...
Yep.
You're comparing the first month of the Steam, of all of the Steam machines.
Yeah, the point is, if I say Steam machines will outsell the PS4, and I say, look, the Steam machines came out yesterday and they sold 28 million of them in the first 2 hours, you'll go, oh, but the PS4 sold 80 million in total since it came out, and we'll have an argument about it.
But we're talking the same period, so the same quarter, the same month, period. That sort of thing.
Yeah. Right. And I'm leaving myself a little bit of wiggle room in case they outsell them massively in the first week and then never sell any more again. So I can claim a week as the period.
Okay, that's right? Fair. That's
a little
fair.
Bit of wiggle all room. Right. So I get to choose what the period is, but there will be a period.
No. Let's set a minimum size for the period because it can't be, it can't be just the first hour they're available. That's not going to fly. Let's say a week is the smallest unit of measurement we can use.
A week or a month or a quarter or something.
A week to a quarter. Water.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Take it.
All right. You're wrong. Look, you're wrong on that one.
In the
dude.
First 10.318 days, it outsold the. Yeah. But there you go.
No, that's
my prediction. And then, because we chucked in bonus predictions and I got a shilling last time for not having done a bonus prediction last year, I'm going to chuck in someone buys Canonical.
All of Canonical or part of Canonical?
I'm leaving it open.
No, you can't. No. Unambiguous.
Unambiguous. I'm talking here about either the whole company or a division of it. Someone buying an Ubuntu phone does not count as someone buying a part of Canonical.
It's going to be either the client division,
the cloud division, or both.
Or all of it.
Yeah.
So you believe that one of those three outcomes will happen in 2015?
Yeah. That's my shoot the moon bonus prediction. No, right? I'm not sure it's going to happen.
Given the bollocking that I got over announcing VR and delivering VR, right? Are we talking about the actual sale will completely go through?
For the purposes of this discussion, a clear announcement that it's happening is enough, because that's the important thing here.
Yeah.
When they actually put ink on paper is not the important thing. The important thing about VR is not that people would like it to happen, it's that you can actually walk into a shop and buy stuff.
All right, wait a minute.
Gotcha.
If you can list right now the company that you think will buy Canonical, I'll give you a bonus point next year if it comes true.
No, because I don't know who it'll pay.
You're such a pansy.
I could list 25 companies and it'll probably be one of them.
List one company. No. It's just a bonus point. I'll give it to you.
I'm already getting a bonus point if it happens at all.
If you get it right, it comes off of my score. Just pick one. Pick a company. 3, 2, 1. Pick.
I don't know. Honestly, I don't.
You got nothing.
No, I'm turning it down. I'm turning down
bonus
the chance.
Point loss.
It's not going to be. It's not going to be the cloud side.
Right. So.
All right. All right.
Brian Lundy, right. Your predictions for 2015.
I would like to
please.
Start off heavily with Steam boxes will not ship. Not one Steam box will ship in 2015. I will be sad, but not one will ship. I am basing on Valve's past track record of when they ship things. They typically take several years to ship something past announcing it, and if they shipped in 2015, they would be at least a year to a year and a half early. So they will not ship this year.
Well, we can't both win.
Unambiguous. The other one.
Is that your actual first prediction?
That's my first prediction. I wrote this a while ago.
Your first prediction is the inverse of
the
his
antithesis
prediction.
That's actually interesting.
Yeah.
They can ship and die on their ass in the market, and then neither of us win.
That's true.
Right, so you
possible.
Don't believe. So all right. So Brian, you don't believe that any official Steam box will
not
ship
one.
At all in 2015.
Now I want to be clear.
All right.
There is a possibility that Valve will ship another round of beta boxes to developers. I'm not counting that. I'm counting boxes that
so you're
consumers
consumer
can purchase. From Amazon.com, yeah, Best Buy, whatever.
Yeah. Presumably, if I put SteamOS on a machine and then sell it
that
to a friend
of
mine, that does not count as a Steam machine shipping. Yeah. Right.
All right.
All right. Fair enough.
Although I'm tempted to do it just so you lose the bet, but, you know.
My second prediction is Ubuntu phones will actually ship in 2015, but sell significantly, and by significantly, I mean less than half of any competing phone, and that includes the Yola phone or Firefox OS.
Any competing phone.
Let's be clear here so this doesn't get twisted. So clearly it's not going to sell as well as Android or iOS, but I'm going to say it's going to sell worse than half of what either Yola or powered phones or Sailfish or Firefox OS powered phones will sell during the same
couple of questions there. The Yola phone, there's only one, right? And they don't give out sales figures, so that's going to be hard to verify next year, but fine. But Firefox, there are a bunch of different phones.
Yep.
Do you mean Ubuntu phones in total will sell less than half of Yola phones in total or Firefox phones in total?
Yep.
Or do you mean an individual Ubuntu phone will sell less than an individual Firefox phone?
Yep. In fact, I'm willing to go a step further. I will say that they will sell less than half of either of those after, in average, based on the month. So you can take the highest selling month of Ubuntu powered phones and compare it against the lowest selling month of Yola powered phones or Firefox OS powered phones, and Ubuntu powered phones still won't hit the halfway mark.
No fucking way, man. Right, okay, but that's your prediction. I look forward
to being
wrong.
That's my prediction. My bonus prediction is that is a fairly simple one, and I feel like it's a pretty quick shoe-in, is Chrome OS will, by the end of the year, run all Android apps and have the full Google Play Store available so people can sit down and install whatever the hell they want of Android apps on their Chrome OS devices.
Okay. Not sure I understand what the point of
boring,
Chrome OS is then.
That is a boring, boring bonus prediction, by the way.
I think that's a rather exciting prediction because that combines together two of the most popular platforms on the planet and the two most popular and biggest Linux platforms on the planet basically into one platform.
You know what? You're not going to like this, Brian Lundy, but I think you're hedging this year on the predictions.
Ooh.
I think you're hedging a little bit.
You think I'm hedging?
They're not very exciting. They're not pushing the boundaries. This is not the Lunduke that we know and love.
You think so?
Yeah. Come on.
I agree. I'm confident all three of those will happen.
I think the Ubuntu one's a reach. That's worth the shot. Well, so next time in the next show, Jono and Jeremy, you get the chance to be more correct and more outlandish all at once.
And I want to be clear that based on Jono's statements, it is clear to infer that Jono believes that Ubuntu phones won't sell worth crap in 2015. Otherwise, he would assume that mine was a reach.
in 60 seconds.
Right, here's what I think Google should do. Let me pay some smallish amount of money, let's say 10 quid a year. Then every website which displays Google ads doesn't display them to me. No AdSense, no AdWords, no double click, no Google ads in phone apps. Google keeps, say, 50 pence of that 10 quid. Then they distribute the remaining £9.50 to all the sites and apps I've visited over the year. Nothing changes. From my point of view, I get an internet and a phone with way fewer ads in it for the cost of three beers. From a site owner's point of view, they still get paid the same amount, which is probably enough to buy three beers. From Google's point of view, they still get money, which they don't have enough of already. Everyone's screamingly happy. There'll be some people out there who say, why not just use Adblock, which is basically saying I refuse to pay for the things that I view on the net. If you think that, then I'm sure you won't like this idea, but since you and your opinions are a horrible plague on the world, I'm sure no one will actually give a damn about your opinion. Fine, at the moment, Adblock might be the best of a bunch of bad alternatives, but you just pay a tenner and get no ads, everybody wins. Google, if you're listening and you decide to do this, you only have to give me, say, 10 pence out of every tenner, and maybe you can use the extra money you get to stop shutting down stuff that I actually like.
All right, on the show now, we've got Michael Hall, who is a community manager at Canonical, who are obviously building Ubuntu. And Michael's very involved in building the developer platform around the new Ubuntu phone. So how are you doing, Mike?
Hey, I'm doing good. Thank you guys for having me on.
No worries.
No, it's great to have you here. So, you know, a lot of people, maybe to just get this started, a lot of people have been hearing a lot about this Ubuntu phone that's going to be coming out in February. And there's been a lot of talk about Ubuntu over the last couple of years on mobile devices. What's going on right now in your world? Like, what are you working on in the build up to these phones coming out?
Are you talking about me personally or Canonical and Ubuntu in general?
Well, let's talk about more generally in Ubuntu with Canonical, but also, like, what are you and the rest of the team working on?
So generally in Canonical, we're working on the finishing touches of our RTM images. We've already given those to BQ, who are getting their phones ready to come out mid-February-ish. So we're right. Finishing that up. We're working on the first set of updates that are going to go to those phones. And then a month or two ago, they started building images for the next release of Ubuntu, which is the Vivid Verbit, which is coming out in April of 2015. So that's been the main focus from the Canonical side on the phone. For me and the rest of the community team, we've been working hard on a major update to the developer portal, developer.ubuntu.com, in order right. to support a contest that we're running now with China Mobile. We had to get a lot of that content translated into Chinese, and our old website wasn't really well suited to that. It was going to be a major time-consuming pain and even a financial pain to get that old site to support Chinese. So we made the leap. We switched over to Django CMS, and there was a lot of work involved in all that to migrate the content over. It's got a brand new theme now that's mobile accessible, so you can look at it on your phone, which is really nice. We got a lot of complaints that our platform describing how to write phone apps didn't look very good when viewed on a phone. So that's that all went live mid-December, right before we all went on break. So that was the last thing we were working on. Now we've all come back. We're fixing some broken links and stuff on there.
Just before you go on, you mentioned you dropped China Mobile into the conversation. And I think I certainly saw some Ubuntu community members who were a little surprised by this. Like, so what's the deal with Ubuntu in China? What's going on with that?
So Ubuntu's been doing really well in China on the desktop side. I don't know how many people are familiar, but there's an Ubuntu, or there's a Chinese version of Ubuntu. It's called Ubuntu Chilin, I think is the correct pronunciation for that.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Regular Ubuntu with different integrated services to use things that are popular and accessible in China.
It's more chilling.
Yes, it's much chilling. More chilling.
It's just chilling. That's cool.
Chilling with Brobuntu, bro.
What, now, right? Hang on. So are China Mobile and Meizu the same people?
No. Meizu's the OEM, the hardware company. They make the handsets. China Mobile is the cell carrier over there. They're, I think, the biggest, by subscriber base, the biggest carrier in the world, just because they're the major one in China. And they're running a competition now in conjunction with some government IT organizations and several of the universities over there to get apps and scopes written for Ubuntu phones in preparation for the Chinese launch of the Meizu phones.
So you've got, what, BQ, who are Spanish, who are bringing out phones with Ubuntu on them in, quote, to quote you, mid-February-ish, which is not the most accurate timescale I've ever heard.
Oh, no, no. I think it is bound to be far more accurate than some of their past announcement dates, so it should be just
fine. Harsh. But then there's
Meizu. I was going to say, I'm shocked that it took this long for that to happen.
I know.
Yeah, I've been holding myself back so bad, man.
I appreciate that, Brian, you taking it easy on me.
I am showing a lot of restraint here because you have a kind face, Michael. I don't want to make you cry. I'm going to feel terrible about that the entire rest of the day if I do.
So, shut up. Where are Meizu bringing a phone?
Sorry, Stuart, what was that?
When are Meizu bringing a phone out?
I don't know the dates for that. It's going to be after BQ, though, so sometime after mid-February-ish.
All right. But that's,
do you have a sense of whether it's a week after that or 6 months after that?
How about 2015-ish?
No, I don't have a sense. I would assume it's not going to be a week after. I would assume that it will be several weeks or a couple of months after.
Okay, that's fine. That's cool. Spain is cool. China's super nifty. And as you pointed out, very chillin'. When can people in the glorious continent of North America go to a store and buy an Ubuntu phone? Is it going to be 2013, 2014, 2015? Which year is it?
That was that restraint we heard about, right?
Yeah, I'm still showing a lot of it, by the way.
It's definitely going to start with 20.
That was a really good answer, man.
That's a good answer, man.
That was really good.
So there's two questions. When are we going to have handsets that will work on the USA's awkward 3G frequencies? I don't know on that. Hopefully within a year or so, we will get an OEM that can already make phones for this market.
Wait. Whoa. Are you saying possibly like a year or so from now?
So 2016-ish.
So 2016-ish? So there's phones that can run Ubuntu that would be functional in the United States of America and Canada?
That would be my guess, just based on, you know, how long it's taken from once we had public agreements with BQ and Meizu to having those phones, you know, up and available for sale. So even if we sign somebody today, getting it through the process of getting the phones actually out and for sale, I would expect it to take about that long.
Michael, you are an adorable man. You have a cute haircut. Your nose is distinguished, and your chin, while it is kind of cut off by my screen, I assume is dashing and rugged.
That's all very nice. However, we mute Brian right after that?
Have you ever mentioned to Mark and potentially the rest of the crew that you have competitors that are also shipping phones, many of them Linux-powered, that are going after much the same market as Ubuntu and have been shipping for quite some time? Has anyone mentioned that within Canonical? I'm just curious what your internal meetings are like in that regard.
Much the same market. I'm assuming here we're no longer talking about the North American market.
I'm talking about the nerd market, because let's be honest here. The people you guys are going to get with the Ubuntu phones in, let's say, North America first are going to be the nerds. It's going to be me. It's going to be John O'Bacon. It's going to be Jeremy Garcia. It'd be our wonderful Ginger if he was over on a good continent, too. But it's going to be people like us that are going to be the early adopters that are walking around sporting these beautiful phones with this awesome Unity dashboard and showing people how cool it is to get them to use it. Okay. But when can people go get one?
Let's be clear.
That's kind of
right?
Important.
Your definition of a good continent is the one that doesn't get an Ubuntu phone. I'm getting one in February.
Wait. If you don't have one yet, I'm willing to put $5 that you won't have one in February.
I'll take that bet. I'll go double or quits on that.
Because my first Ubuntu phones are shipping articles was written in 2013. 15. It is not that
all right,
year
Brian,
anymore.
I went in on this. I bet you, Brian, $50 that Stuart Langridge will own an Ubuntu phone in February.
No. Yep. Not a Nexus 4 or something running Ubuntu.
No,
BQ phone.
That's actually running Ubuntu.
No, $50.
He was able to purchase in his country, not in Spain and shipped somewhere else. Purchased in Great Britain from the Queen.
Why is that important? Also, we should interview Michael, who is here from Canonical.
Okay, if you have to smuggle a phone across borders in order to get it, it's not really shipping at that point in your territory.
No. I bet you $50. Canonical's talked about February. I bet you $50 that Stuart Langridge, living in England, will have a fully packaged BQ phone running Ubuntu natively installed on it. I guarantee you $50.
I will absolutely take that if he either buys it from a carrier that exists in his country or buys it from a store that exists in his country. If so, I will take it at $50. I'll take it at $100. I'll take it at $200.
Carriers over there, right?
What if BQ gives him one? What if Canonical gives him one?
Hmm.
Does that count? Are we in on that bet?
Production ready. You know what? If they give him one, but other people could buy it too, then yes, I'll take that bet. If other people in London or Liverpool or Mordor or wherever he is, I'll jump in on that bet.
So you're saying that if more people...
Brian, for $500, I will take Stuart off the early access list.
Oh,
fuck.
Oh.
Oh, we nearly got him there.
What does it say about me that I'm seriously considering that offer?
Anyway.
It means you don't know how much cloud I have in Canonical. That's what it means.
Back to the point slightly, Mr. Hall. So, new phones coming out, right? And I will have one, regardless of Brian's opinion. Whether people will be able to walk into a shop next to my house and buy one is another question, which I don't care about, because I'll have one. There it is. But I'll be honest with you. I've been playing with Ubuntu phone and writing apps for it despite not having a device for a while, and I've now got my Nexus 4 running it again. Hooray. And that's helping me develop things. It doesn't feel consumer ready. Right?
Is that because of apps or is that because of the actual platform?
Things like, I mean, I've been working on an app which uses push notifications as an example. And it's had a lot of problems. Now, those problems are in the emulator at the moment. But it still feels like there's quite a way to go before the thing is ready for developers to build things for it, for example. It still feels like there's a way to go before it's ready for people to use it as their main phone. Are you seeing the first phone as being something which my parents could use, for example? Or is it targeted, as Brian says, at a nerd market?
It's like Brian says, we're targeting a nerd market first. And we're going to have the same problem on phones that we have on desktop, that we've always had on desktop, and that is, you know, people, if they're so used to a certain ecosystem and they're so invested in a certain ecosystem, yeah, people are going to have a hard time changing. And yes, we don't have all of the apps right now. We have a lot of apps. We've got a lot of alternative apps for things that are popular. But, you know, if somebody absolutely needs WhatsApp and we don't have WhatsApp, then it's not going to be ready for them.
Wait, you guys don't have WhatsApp? I'm out.
Nobody has WhatsApp except for Android and iOS. I don't even think Windows Phone has WhatsApp.
Honestly, the approach of targeting the nerd market first, I think, is a smart one. And truthfully, if I'm being truly honest, if you guys have one that I can buy in North America, I would be tempted to get one. So I'm interested in that. But I'm far more looking at it. Yeah, when I've installed it on, say, like a Nexus 7 tablet, I agree with Stuart. It doesn't quite feel ready yet. It's a little bit buggy. There's some SDK things that I think could use some work still. It feels good. It feels like a great start, but it feels a little not quite consumer ready. And if it's not quite consumer ready and it's not actually shipping in any market where, you know, I or the majority of our listeners can actually buy one, then it starts to make me get bummed out, truly very bummed out about it.
Well, why don't we, I mean, riding on that point that Brian just made, I have a question for you, Michael. A lot of people who are listening to Bad Voltage will know that there's going to be an Ubuntu phone. Most people won't have tried one because they won't have a Nexus 4 that they've been able to test it on. And they may have seen some videos on Google Plus or whatever. But put yourself in the position, Michael, of someone who's listening to the show and they've got an Android phone or they've got an iPhone. Why would they go and buy an Ubuntu phone? Like, what would you say is the compelling enough reason that someone who isn't, you know, a fan of Ubuntu necessarily, you know, people in the Ubuntu community are going to go out and get one because they want to own it. It's cool. But for somebody who's just a general listening to the show who maybe doesn't use Ubuntu, like, what is going to convince them to put their money on the table and buy one of these phones, do you think? What would you say from your experience?
From my experience, there's two things. All the reasons why somebody would use Ubuntu on the desktop apply to the phone. So if you're sick of, you know, Android's problems or malware or permissions issues, all of that's going to be, you know, same reasons as you would change on the desktop. You'd move on the phone. We've got a better permission model. It makes more sense. It's better for the user. It makes things a little harder for the developer, but I think on balance, it's a big improvement over what Android offers. And then, you know, we've got a lot of apps that are being made just for Ubuntu that are really good apps, and they're not on other platforms. I know Stuart ported his Riddling app to other platforms, so it's possible. But there's a lot of others that are being made for our platform that are really good. And in the near future, once we've got hardware that can converge, you can run those same apps on your laptop, your desktop, whatever. So you don't have to bounce back and forth between, okay, this is what I use for email on my phone, this is what I use for email on my desktop. It's going to be the same app in both places. So I think
now,
having
that same
experience, that same ecosystem, and more importantly, the same features, you know, on your phone and on your laptop. There's a lot of things that my Android apps don't do that my desktop apps do.
How would you counter people who say, like, for example, I have an Android phone that I use as my day-to-day device because my Nexus 4 sadly died, so I don't have that anymore. I have an iPad and I have an Android phone and I use Twitter. I've got the Twitter client on my phone and I've also got the Twitter client on my iPad. I do have the same experience. I have, for all intents and purposes, a converged experience.
Do you have a Twitter app on your desktop?
I've got my web browser with Twitter in it, so yes.
Why don't you use the web browser for Twitter on your phone?
Notifications.
Because the app's way nicer.
Notifications.
So if you had a way nicer app also on your desktop, you would probably use that, wouldn't you?
Yes and no. Yes and no. I think if I had a way nicer app on my desktop, I would, probably. But it's the convert. I 100% agree with the convergence vision. Obviously, I was part of it. But to me, the convergence is not enough in itself to convince people to. I don't think people are going to go and buy Ubuntu phones because at some point in the next 2 years, you'll be able to run the same app on Ubuntu desktop, phone, and tablet.
Wait a minute.
Because right now, it'll just be the phone that you'll be able to get. The Unity 8 is not shipping for at least another year or so, right?
Right. Well, shipping by default, yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's going to be more of a selling factor later on than it is right now. But I think it is going to be an important one for us. And it's going to be the one, I think, that takes us beyond the nerd fanboy market and into more general consumer. Especially, you know, if people start selling these as bundles, you get a phone and, you know, a laptop kind of thing.
I got to chime in and
well, then
I think Jono is fundamentally wrong. I think the convergence vision is absolutely enough to make people excited. The concept of having, you know, a single tablet or a single phone, for me, more interesting as a tablet, because I'm just not that big of a phone guy, where I could plug it in and make it my full desktop, bring it with me in my pocket. If it's always with me, that's a very exciting and compelling argument. My concern is that it's not here. And so if we're having this kind of soft launch of Ubuntu phones in a couple of markets that aren't any markets that I'm in, and that, you know, most of the tech reporting world isn't in, that Ubuntu Phone is just going to be labeled as an also-ran right out of the gate. And how far down the road will we have to wait until we hit that convergence point where people can actually do that thing that would make the Ubuntu Phone or the Ubuntu Touch tablet experience truly amazing and make it crush the competition? It'll be just far too late, and we'll just have this kind of stale, dull egg of an Ubuntu Phone sitting out there that'll been out there for 2 years, but no one will have been able to buy it. But it didn't matter because it didn't have the cool features anyway. That's what concerns me. And I like the convergence idea. I like the vision. It just seems like we're a long ways off. Now, if you launch, let's say, the Meizu phones now, will those phones be software updatable far enough so that the convergence will become possible with those devices? Or are those devices kind of just throwaway devices while people are waiting for the phones that do the real killer functionality?
They will all get software updates. So our plan is to keep every phone on the market up to date with the latest Ubuntu. So instead of like Android, where you still have a significant number of devices running 2.3 or something, our plan is to keep them all up to date. And to do that, we've separated the parts that we ship from the parts that the OEMs and the carriers ship so that we can send our updates independently of them. So yeah, the Meizu phones, that's the BQ cool. phones, they're going to be updated to the latest Ubuntu as far into the future as we can possibly support the hardware. The hardware is capable of, you know, plugging into an external monitor and keyboard and stuff. Then once the software is ready for that, they'll...
Are the phones that you plan to be shipping next going to be hardware capable of that?
I don't know if any of them have specific HDMI ports, but I think with USB... the micro USB, you can do that somehow. I know somebody did it with a Galaxy Nexus or a Nexus 4 last year. Okay. Someone in our community was able to get it exporting video to a monitor.
Yeah, you need MHI or whatever it's called.
A
thing here. Towards the end of last year, I was starting to lose the faith a little bit on Ubuntu Phone, thinking, well, you know, there aren't that many applications and maybe it's not going to take off and we're still delayed and so on. But then, because I'm on the early access list, until Brian pays Mike $500,
I'm on the list though, right?
I was invited to a briefing session done by Christian Perino, who's the head of mobile things, and my old boss, actually. And he was going on about how the scope stuff is actually really, really important. And it made me think, wow, it is. This is genuinely a game changer. But nobody's talking about it. This stuff
is this the point where you ask me for the generic JSON scope again?
It's not the point where I ask. You get enough hassle off of me outside interviews for developer stuff that I want, so I'm not asking that. No, my point is, have you guys got some kind of epic marketing blitz waiting to go a month from now? Or are you just going to assume that how this should work is going to diffuse out there into the world? Because it isn't.
I know... there's no plan in our team for a marketing blitz around scopes. The other team, the marketing teams, they might have that. We spent a lot of time in the early mid-fall of last year drastically improving our scope development story. So before that, we didn't have much documentation. The tools didn't work really well.
Bear with me. I'm not talking about developing them here. I'm talking about explaining why they're a good idea. Yeah. I mean, I worked at Canonical. I helped build scopes. I helped build the things that scopes fit into. And I didn't get it properly until Christian explained it. Why is this not being written in 500-foot-tall letters of fire on the top of every canonical building the totally world agree. Over? So people get it, because it's really important.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it may be a case of, you know, once you understand it, it makes so much sense and seems so obvious that you don't feel that this has to go out and be explained. So maybe we've all just fallen into that trap that we all see it as obvious.
I can tell you it is.
I will gladly offer my services because despite my repeated attempts to understand it, scope still seems extraordinarily dumb and pointless to me. So if you guys can come up with a pitch that explains it to me so I'm into it, I will let you know and critique it so that you guys can come up with a cool marketing blitz.
Why don't we... All right, why don't we do this? Here's a in the interest of signing Michael up for work. Something's never changed. Why don't we do this? Brian Lunduke needs convincing, right? So, Michael, I challenge you to go onto the Bad Voltage forum at community.badvoltage.org and write a post that once and for all will shut Lunduke up and explain.
And if you can explain it to me
work,
so that they work, can you do that for cool, us? I will guarantee you that I will write at least a 1,000 word article on how cool it is for Network World if you can show me that it's cool, because I can't figure out how it would be cool yet.
And I think it would be fine if you delegate this to Christian, right? Michael, that would be fine. Get him to write the description or something, because I was sitting there going, wow, I get it now. It was excellent.
Also, in addition to the Network World,
well, hang on,
World
I wasn't article, on that call, so Stuart, why don't you write this up?
I also want Lunduke to publicly apologize to Ubuntu when he's convinced
I'll
about
tell you what,
Scopes.
Yeah, you
can
know
you
what,
that, Lunduke?
If you guys can prove to me that Scopes are cool, I will publicly apologize on stage at Live Voltage to Ubuntu and to the Ubuntu community for all of my harsh words.
All right, now we're talking.
All right.
That is far more damaging to me than $500 is, I tell you what. So that's that's a big win.
And on that bombshell, I guess we should probably wrap this up. Michael, thank you so much for coming and joining us today. And also, I know that we'll have questions in the Bad Voltage community. So, and I know you've been on the forum as well. So I'm sure that, you know, our community members will have lots to ask you. So if you can head over and answer their questions, that'd be great.
Sure thing. Thanks you guys for having me on. It's been a blast.
Hey, Michael, you're welcome.
That was a little creepy.
For some, food and the act of eating are merely about sustenance. That mindset is antithetical to the way I approach gastronomy. That said, when Soylent hit the crowdfunding scene, I was intrigued. And I wasn't the only one. They had over $2 million in pre-orders using Tilt and have since raised roughly $1.5 million from venture capitalists. So, what is Soylent? Unlike its eponymous plankton-colored movie nutritional source, it's not people. It is, however, a meal replacement drink that aims to be nutritionally complete, low-cost, easy to prepare, and flavor-neutral. For those, like Soylent's creator who, quote-unquote, resented the time, money, and effort the purchase, preparation, consumption, and cleanup of food was consuming, it can be used in lieu of food for all three meals. During the initial formulation of the product, he even subsided on nothing but Soylent for 30 days and has been living on a 90% Soylent diet ever since. For those who actually enjoy eating, it can also be used to replace individual meals at your discretion. It has a 50-30-20 ratio of carbohydrates, fats, and protein, and a 3-serving pouch contains 2,010 calories if you include the optional oil mixture. A 7-pouch bag is $85 as a one-time purchase with the starter kit, or $70 as a monthly subscription. I placed my order on July 1st and received it on December 15th. That's correct, it took 5.5 months. Unfortunately, based on shipping estimates currently on the website, it doesn't look like things have improved much since I placed my order. Do note, however, that reorders should ship in roughly 1 to 2 weeks, which is much more reasonable. So now that I actually have Soylent, what do I think? I should note here that radically altering your diet in the way Soylent's creator has could have potentially serious health ramifications. Before you consume nothing but a nutrient slurry you heard about on Bad Voltage, created by someone you don't know on the internet, you should definitely do a copious amount of research and should probably speak with a medical professional. Realistically though, I don't think we'll know the true long-term implications of something like this anytime soon. With that out of the way, let me say that as a tech guy, I really like what they're doing. While they're happy to sell you the product, there is a huge portion of the site dedicated to DIY that allows you to access and tweak their recipe to your liking and make it at home. This is not your average company. Additionally, they actually version the product and are iterating on it fairly quickly. The shipment I received was Soylent 1.3, which replaced the primary source of potassium, tweaked the flavor, and changed the packaging. Soylent 1.2 replaced fish oil with algae oil to make the product animal-free, and removed the enzyme blend added in a previous version, why Silent 1.1 reduced the amount of sucralose, added the aforementioned enzyme blend to improve digestion, and updated the packaging. I don't know of any other food vendor that details the changes in their product in this manner, but it's a trend I welcome. On to the actual product. The taste has been described as purposefully bland, and that's not too far off. Opinions seem to vary widely, but to me it has a very mild vanilla flavor. I didn't use a blender for my initial tests, and the product is slightly gritty, but certainly tolerable to me. Others I had taste Soylent did not concur with my assessment. I did learn that leaving Soylent in the refrigerator overnight helps the consistency immensely. I've had almost nothing but Soylent for breakfast and lunch over the last 2 days, which resulted in me feeling both sated and having normal energy levels. I ran 3 miles before dinner yesterday, and I can't say I noticed any difference between how I felt during that run and any normal run. Luckily, I've had none of the gastric distress, intestinal discomfort, or soul-crushing flatulence that has been reported by some. So, what's the bad voltage verdict? I can't imagine consuming nothing but Soylent for 3 meals a day, every day. I just like food too much. Even if I didn't, I think the impact of cooking, eating, and sharing food has a profound impact on local cultures, and one that I'd hate to see go away. But the openness and transparency of the company, their willingness to iterate, and the nutritional completeness along with ease of preparation does mean that I'll likely use it to replace breakfast or lunch a couple times a week moving forward. Now, is Soylent right for you? That's too dependent on your gastronomic proclivities and intestinal fortitude for me to say.
Important thing, which you've kind of, you talked about a little bit in the review, but not very much.
All right.
Is it actually, you know, nice? I mean, you spoke an awful lot about, you know, you need a medical professional's advice, and it's got fish oil in it, or it hasn't got fish oil in it. It's a version 1.3.2 Alpha 1 release candidate or some bollocks, right? And then when,
well, you don't want to
is
drink
it
the
nice,
release candidate
it tastes of vanilla. And that was it. It's food. What's it like?
I think part of the paradigm they're going for, that it is really not food in the traditional sense. They're purposely going for flavor neutral. So they're actually trying to remove the flavor as they iterate, not add flavor. So it is purposely bland is really the best description I can describe. It is very slightly vanilla. I think the textural is going to be more of an issue than the taste for most people, because it is, initially, if you shake it without refrigerating it or blending it, it is a little bit gritty, and it doesn't particularly bother me. I had it, you know, yesterday unrefrigerated, and it really did make a huge difference, a surprising difference to refrigerate it overnight.
Why is it purposefully bland? I don't get that.
So from what I've read from the guy that started it, kind of two reasons. I don't think likes food, so he's just looking for sustenance. But B, I think
asshole.
From his mentality, for the same reason they took a lot of the sweetener out, is that you can add flavor, you can never take flavor away, right? So for the people that don't want flavor, there isn't any. If you want to blend in peanut butter or strawberries or vodka, whatever you want, you can always add that, but you can never take it away. So they want to start with a pretty clean canvas, and from there you could do whatever you want with it.
So then you could have a bunch of Soylent paste, and you could drop in a couple drops of strawberry flavoring, and now you got strawberry paste.
That makes sense. Makes sense.
Well, see, here's the thing, right? I'm not a big fan of basketball, right? Never really liked it, never really got it. At no point is anyone going to put me in charge of the NBA because I don't like it, right? Why is a guy who basically doesn't like food...
Right, but you don't need basketball to live, right? And you do need sustenance to live. So I don't know that that's...
Well, yeah, but why would you go, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to eat some pale grey paste made out of nothing and fish oil. When you could say, you know what? I'll have roast chicken from someone who actually gives a damn, like Michelle Rood Jr.
like I said, I think I'm pretty far outside of the target market here. I passionately care about food and food culture and different types of food. I don't know that you'll meet anyone that has tried to experience more cultures, different cultures' food in its native setting. I mean, that's I have very much the Bourdain mentality there. When I go to a different country, I'm not going to where the tourists are going.
You're
not
going to Taco Bell, right?
You know, to buy a piece of 99-cent fish in the jungle. But I think it is an interesting concept. that certainly has a place. And one of the big concerns that, looking around, that some people do have is that there's currently a food staple now, and the name of it is slipping. It's something nut that is in Africa for people that can't afford sustenance, that is supposed to provided at a very cheap cost. And one of his goals with this is to replace that. He wants to get it down to where $1.50 a day of Soylent could sustain you. And the concern that some people have is that if you can feed people for $1.50 a day, a lot of NGOs and stuff are going to push that in places like Africa or parts of Southeast Asia, parts of South America, and it will displace the local food culture, which I think would be a net loss.
And it's not just the food culture, but the food economy as well. Like, you know, in the old days,
and the food economy. Correct.
In like Africa, it was like, well, let's try and grow like sweet potatoes, because sweet potatoes are pretty nutritious, and you can grow a ton of them even on really crappy land. So let's grow a lot of sweet potatoes. Then it created jobs for farmers and people to move the food around, and marketers. And it seems like this is just taking that idea, getting rid of anything that might be local, and making the entire economy of the world and the ability to eat dependent on our ability to put stuff on huge ships and airplanes and transport them around from giant factories in Detroit. And that seems weird to me.
So that part of their goal, I don't agree with, I will say, and I'm not on board with in any way, shape, or form. But their other goal, I think, is interesting.
This shit is hipster fuel. That's what it is. It's hipster fuel,
dude,
is the way I look at it.
I don't know any hipster that is going to go, green paste. No, they want to they want to sample Creole.
They want locally sourced, organic, grass fed.
No. Right. It's a different type of. No, that's like foodies are into that kind of stuff, right? Completely. But there's a lot of. I know of some people who've looked into this Soylent stuff. I'm married to one of them who like the idea of it because, you know, sometimes when I have a busy day, and I don't have time to eat, I can skip through it and I can get it. And it's kind of like a trendy thing, in the same way that people are tracking every element of their health and they're optimizing their health around it. I think people are going to be looking at optimizing every element of how they eat as well for efficiency. And it seems like we're losing at the benefit of efficiency, we're losing the spirit of what's important about being a human being. Not just the farming piece and food culture. I just don't like I know I sound like an old fart, but I just don't like the trend that this sets. The only thing that I think is neat about this is, you know, chucking this out of airplanes into Africa. There's an obvious benefit there. Or alternatively, you know, for example, this would be great for me to have in our garage in case of an earthquake, right?
So anything you can chuck out of a plane in Africa has a benefit. That's just how that works.
Maybe not the most eloquent way of describing it, but
it probably would work fine. But I mean, you would have to agree that if you, in certain situations, once or twice a month, have to skip lunch because you're super busy, having something that you could make in 15 seconds and is legitimately healthy is better than not having anything.
Yeah,
I think I will augment my life with this. It's certainly not something I'm going to use regularly. Certainly, I will never have nothing but it because I like food too much, as I said. But I think to augment a already decent diet, I think it makes a lot of sense for people that might be a little bit on the busier side.
Yeah. As Jono says, it's hipster fuel to some extent, and foodies aren't going to like it. If you opened up a store on 4th Street in San Francisco and called it Artisanal Soylent and sold this stuff, it'd be like fucking iPhone 6 release day.
Wait a minute.
The block and into the sea to get a hold of this stuff.
I know you meant artisanal Soylent, but you said art is anal Soylent, and that is a really weird thing to say.
You've got to work on your
pronunciation of artisanal, my friend.
People think art is weird at times.
In his defense, it was handmade, that pronunciation.
I can kind of see the argument of just have something in the cupboard in case, you know, of the zombie apocalypse, or just because you haven't got time to cook anything, right? But how hard is it just to have rice, man? I mean,
But this is a lot more.
I don't get why it exists. Question.
There's also something to be said, and this is, you know, I think that if you're the kind of person that doesn't have time to eat, you should fucking make time, because it's important. It's important that we take time away from work. The thing that worries me most about this is that there are some people that all they want to do is make life as fucking efficient as possible, and it's like, take time away to be a human being.
Well.
Right.
You know, did you guys see the movie Interstellar?
Not yet.
All right. It's a great movie. But basically part of it is that there's this disease called blight that kind of destroys the food crops of the world. And this really doesn't give too much away. But so it comes to a point where in the world, the only food crop that's growing worth any hill of beans is corn. They can just grow corn and that's all they can do. And so there's this one scene where they're sitting at a dinner table. This isn't part of the plot. And they're having a nice dinner. And they had three things for dinner. They had a corn casserole, corn bread, and corn on the cob. And the people justifiably looked miserable as hell. Now, I think one thing that some of the people obviously did right is this whole complete flavorless thing, because at least then you can kind of fake it into something else. You can turn it into an ingredient in other things. You can create a Soylent-based casserole that's like half Soylent, half whatever two or three food things you have in your local area, and you can kind of create your own thing. So that's not too bad. It basically becomes like a flavorless, good for you Nutella, essentially, and that's okay.
Right.
Is it possible to make your own? I know they're very open about how they're changing the recipe and something, but do they have the secret of Soylent?
Like I said in the review, they actually have a diy.soylent.me. And they give the full exact way to make it, and then you can, the kind of wiki-like functionality where people can tailor it to if you want a version less sodium or more this, or you're magnesium deficient or whatever it may be. So they tell you how to, very specifically how to make it. And that's actually one of the things that I do like about it, is that they seem to be a company that is not just focused on making money, but on doing good as well,
which hearts I think is interesting. Place.
That's pretty rad.
Yeah, yeah.
Even if their stomach's on. So that's the end of the show. What did you get for Christmas, people? Those of you who celebrated Christmas, obviously.
Whoa, there we go. There we have it.
Good job, man. I did great. I got a goddamn metal detector. I've never had a metal detector before. I wanted a metal detector since I was a little kid, because I was going
to
find some serious damn treasure. And I got myself a metal detector.
Have you detected anything yet?
No, I haven't. I've taken it out of the box and read the extremely pointless instruction manual, and that's all I have done with it so far. But I'm going to detect some serious metal.
Right.
You know what?
What is the
I used to be into metal detecting when I was a kid, so you've got a fun-filled weeks of picking up lots of Coca-Cola ring pulls ahead of you.
Oh, this one's badass. It's got four settings on it where you can tell it to basically ignore things like aluminum. So if you find aluminum cans, you can say ignore that. So we'll see how well it actually works. But theoretically, I won't have to be going through the Coke cans, but we'll find out.
Instead of setting it to ignore aluminum, why would you not just set it to only detect gold?
Well, it actually has a coin setting where it detects what it thinks is coins, and if that's the case, then it, you know, it beeps for you.
Which one is it?
I was going to say, this is a pretty high-tech metal detector.
What is it? It's not like a crazy fancy one or anything. Here's a box for it. You guys can see in the video. It's a Pioneer EX.
It's a Bounty Hunter.
It's a Bounty Hunter. Yeah.
Really?
I used to, when I was into metal detecting, I used to have a Garrett metal detector, which did they call it discrimination, you know, where it discriminates between different types. And Bounty Hunters, they're pretty solid.
Are they? I have no idea.
Shut up, Reg.
I know nothing about these.
Jono is so discriminatory that even his metal detector has discrimination built in.
It just doesn't pick up gays.
Goodness gracious.
Anyway.
So metal detector, and you haven't even had a chance to use it yet.
No, I haven't. It's cold and rainy. I'm living in the Pacific Northwest of the United States. It's just bleak outside, man. I'm not going out there for several months.
You'll detect in the spring.
Yeah, no, that comes later.
It's like, I actually like got one day
two things that I plan on reviewing on the show in the future, probably my next two reviews, and they are pretty much the antithesis of Soylent that I reviewed in this one. I actually talked about it the last show, the Innova sous vide. So I'm going to do that as a review. Yeah, and once you take like a steak out of there to get a nice char on it, I got a Searsol, which you connect to a blowtorch. It's actually pretty badass.
Those are awesome looking.
Post a picture of the thing. Yeah, isn't that crazy?
Cool.
Yeah, those are cool.
So two of the things I got that I really liked, you'll hear about on future episodes of Bad Voltage.
Yeah.
What'd you get, Shadow?
What about you? I got some Bose headphones from my wife because I seem to be unable to buy decent headphones, which I absolutely love. Got a load of clothes as well, and then after Christmas went out and bought a surround sound system.
Nice job.
Well,
I'll be having some of that.
Please. Having been to your house, Jono, presumably in 2 or 3 years you'll get round to actually connecting up all the wires.
Shut the fuck up. Actually, it's installed. It's set up. It did. In his defense, take about 2.5 years to set it up. In fact, Ak came to visit and Erica said to him, could you tell him to fix the surround sound system? And then the next time he came to visit a year later, still wasn't fixed.
This is my point, right? I'm not just having a needless go here. It is the cat.
But I plan on reviewing that on the show as well at some point. So what about you, Mr. Langridge?
I got a very cool bag for all my cameras to go in for the videoing that I've been doing, and a tripod as well.
Nice.
Which is actually brilliant, my tripod, but I'm not going to review it because it's basically just 3 extendable sticks, right? It's not complicated technology. I actually had quite a tech light Christmas, to be honest with you. I didn't get much stuff like that. I've started to build up my own personal list of things that I want to buy now.
Right. No shower additions?
No shower additions this time. No. I've got a very cool leather jacket, but that's not technology either. So
same here, yeah. Yeah. Wow, leather jackets. All right. So, speaking of awesome things that are delivered to your house, Rich Wareham.
Worst segue ever, by the way.
Yeah, that was just terrible.
Well, you know.
Well,
I don't have a good history with segues in this show. Not as bad as the guy who founded Segway. Did you hear about that?
No, what?
Did you know that the guy who founded Segway
rolled off a cliff
died by
a Segway?
By rolling off a cliff on a Segway?
No! Oh, that's harsh.
Yeah, so, yeah. I mean, our thoughts go out to his family, of course. Anyway.
Now that we've the made fun of his thing? Death, our thoughts go out to his family.
You need to work on the sincerity thing, man. Seriously.
So, Rich anyway, Wareham, who won what a contest. where we sent him a whole bunch of crap, basically a mystery box full of crap from each of our homes. He got them from Jeremy, he got them from Stuart, and he got them from Jono, and took pictures of them, post them to the forum. They look awesome. Some really cool, randomly weird stuff. In fact, Jeremy sent him a copy of NT, which is ridiculous. But apparently he hasn't gotten mine yet, which suggests to me that he's not going to, because it was sent out a long time ago. So in the interest, so 2 things here. Rich, I want to tell you, man. 1, totally not my fault, but I'm sorry anyway. And 2, I'm going to make it right by sending you another box filled with just random crap from my house. And to give you an example of the kind of random crap that you're going to get the next time around, here's what I sent you the first time. 1 was a, I believe, non-functional, but maybe functional, old external US robotics modem. The second... Nice. Was a completely assembled Lego Simpsons minifig. I believe it was either Itchy or Scratchy. I can't remember which one it was now. But I had a couple of them already, so I sent you one that I didn't want. So you got my already assembled Legos that I didn't want, and I think a non-working external modem. And it was, of course, signed in permanent marker so that you could always admire it and put it on a shelf.
Did you ship this via Pony Express? It's just odd.
No. I know what happened to Brian's parcel, right? So he's there, sorting through all of the shit, trying to work out what to do. And his wife comes in and says, what are you doing, darling? And he says, all I'm doing is I'm taking some of this shit, which clutters up your beautiful house, and I'm putting it in a box and I'm sending it to England. And she's like, I'll take it to the post office in the nearest dumpster. It doesn't arrive. Brian sends a second box of crap out of the house, right? This is going to keep going for like 10 years until you've got no stuff left, and then she'll let one get through.
That's actually a pretty smart strategy.
Plausible.
I would posit that potentially that Brian's full of shit and just couldn't be bothered sending the original box of shit to England.
I don't believe that's the case.
And is now constructing this fallacy right
tissue
here.
Tissue of lies and right here. No, I don't believe that's the case at all, because I was definitely
the house of lies.
Yeah. All right. So good for you, Brian, sending your second fictional box to England. We look forward to Rich Wareham posting a picture of
2 months when I tell you guys what wasn't in that second fictional box. You guys are going to be like, wow, that would have been great if it was real.
Yeah. Also awesome. In this box, a huge bag full of rubies. Amazingly, it didn't arrive.
All right. Anyway, let's talk about Live Voltage.
Yes.
Live Voltage is going to be happening in Los Angeles. For those of you who have been living under a rock or possibly new, we're going to be going to the SoCal Linux Expo, which is, I think we'd all agree, it's definitely one of the best Linux shows in the world, definitely in America. And we're going to be doing a live show on the Friday night at the Southern California Linux Expo. It's going to be the four of us in a room for the first time together doing a live performance in front of an audience. There's going to be some competitions. There's going to be some swag. There's going to be some good times. So make sure you get out there and hang out and see us. We also want to hear what you want to see in the show because we are the four of us, we haven't really planned it yet.
No, we have not.
Wait a minute. I have had my review written for like half a year now or more. So I am ahead of the game.
Shampoo review.
We're spoiling the mistake here, people. I have to say.
All we know is that there's going to be a shampoo review and there's going to be Ak and Brian singing Baby, It's Cold Outside.
No, man.
It's not happening.
It is.
No matter how many times you bring this up, it's not going to happen.
Can we pick another song? You guys have got to sing something.
Why is it that me and Stuart have to sing a duet? Why can't
we do
a
rubber
quartet?
Ducky song?
The rubber ducky song.
Oh, dude, I can kill that song. I'm in.
That sounds like a tacit acceptance, so it's all on you, Eck.
Can we have both of you sat in a giant fictional cardboard bathtub as well singing it?
Well, it's really Rubber Ducky's a one person song, so I could sing it and then Stuart could be my rubber ducky that does the squeaking.
I believe I have been abundantly clear about this point. No singing.
We'll see about that.
That is just a little taste of what you have to look forward to if you attend Scale this year.
And, the last time I sung a song about any of you lot, Jono and I ended up on YouTube for performing the duet from Titanic. It's not happening again.
That's beautiful.
This is sadly true.
We should also say thank you to our sponsors for Live Voltage, actually.
Yes.
Since it's a long way for me to fly and I'm glad I'm not paying for it. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so big thank you to System76. Also, a thank you to Dave Nielsen, who is Bank of Nielsen, for taking care of the money, so we can bill him and all that kind of good stuff. And also, A2 Hosting and Bytemark Hosting, who continue to support the show.
They do.
Fantastic hosting organizations.
Excellently.
So. Yeah. Yeah. All right, so there we are. We've rung in 2015. Anything else you guys think we should talk about, or should we wrap it up?
I think that wraps up the first show of the year pretty well.
Yeah, I'd call this one done.